This is Andrew Cate.
And this is Ryan Capuano.
And welcome to another edition of the Death of Cinema podcast.
In today's episode, shit hits the fan with Darren Aronofsky's mother, while Ryan and Andrew share their picks for their most anticipated films of the rest of 2017.
And we're going to start things off sharing our thoughts on Mother, certainly a film that has a fair shared amount of buzz, and depending on, you know, what end of the spectrum you fall on, that buzz may be very different in your world than in ours. It's a film that very infamously has received a cinema score of F, and for those of you that don't know, it's sort of, you know, the recap of, you know, they sort of just do a sort of ask these general audiences, you know, and they enjoyed it around, they give it a grade or whatever, and to be honest, rating things based on the cinema score is idiotic and stupid because most of these films aren't made for these particular audiences, but I'm going to get into how Paramount is a little bit to blame for that. But getting to the film, actual film, Mother, the latest from Darren Aronofsky, it's a film that's sure to be controversial. It's pretty insane, as most of the work of Aronofsky is, and I loved every single minute of it. This is in strong contention for my favorite film of the year at this point right now. Sort of waiting and debating in my head, sort of what's going to, obviously there's going to be a lot more contenders as the year pushes on, but the film is just really balls to the wall. It just goes for it. It's a film that's actually about something, about many different things, you could say, and it's anchored by an incredible central performance by Jennifer Lawrence, who for my money is my pick right now for Best Actress, although I've heard this year is going to be very competitive in that category, so it's going to be interesting to see if a performance like this can get in there, but it's definitely deserving. The rest of the cast is really fantastic, but I really enjoyed this film, although I know a lot of maybe enjoy isn't the right word.
You know, it's the right word for me. I fucking love this movie. It's really, like you said, it's about very different things and very many things, and I think that the best thing about this film is it can be interpreted in so many different ways. Obviously there are heavy biblical allegories, but I also don't want to get too far into spoilers, because I think the joy of seeing this is, you know, being completely unspoiled, and I was completely unspoiled. I mean, obviously, you know, the name of the movie is Mother, so it kind of gives you a hint of where it might be going, but I want to say, what was it, the last 20 minutes or so was probably the most thoroughly entertained I've been by a movie, and I can't even remember when. That was absolutely insane, and I just had the stupidest grin on my face as all this insanity played out. And to say any more would be to do a disservice to your own experience watching the film. But like you said, Jennifer Lawrence is an actress who never really like wowed me, but I think in this film she really has, you know, some critics called it her Black Swan moment, a la Natalie Portman, and I think that's pretty fair. She's absolutely phenomenal. In a just world, she would walk away with the Best Actress Oscar, but I just don't think that's going to happen this year. C'est la vie. But I really, you know, the most striking thing about this was the cinematography from Matthew Libatique. He really, the whole thing is shot from Jennifer Lawrence's perspective, you know, whether it's, and it's really told in like tight close-ups, and there's a lot, you know, the that tension, that lack of a score to the film really just kind of heightens everything. And the way it just kind of lets the expressions of the actors tell the story and lets that menace build naturally. Michelle Pfeiffer is phenomenal in this as well. Ed Harris is excellent. Really top to bottom, the Gleason brothers have, you know, for the 10 minutes that they're in there, are excellent as well. It's really just, the whole thing is striking and insane. And it's hard. The insanity of it really needs to be unspoiled. So I'm just going to kind of leave it at that. But I will say that it took a full 10 minutes after we left the theater for my wife to even say a single word to me. So I think this film is affecting people.
Yeah, and so just sort of getting briefly back to Jennifer Lawrence's performance, it like feels like at times, and I love how you mentioned, you know, how the story was told specifically from her perspective, and that's made clear, as you mentioned, through the cinematography, but her entire performance is like constantly on edge, and through the use of close-ups, it really makes us focus on her facial expressions, and they're completely sort of on point. You know, Aronofsky is pretty much taking Jennifer Lawrence through the ringer in this film, as well as taking the audience through the ringer. It feels like at many times, particularly in the third act, is that he's just pounding all of our senses, you know, just from every level and sound, visual, etc., just throwing everything he possibly can at us. But it's with a purpose. And I think that's something that a lot of filmmakers don't really have the ability to do, but Aronofsky does that extremely well. And sort of, you know, harking back to something I actually mentioned in our thoughts on the podcast last week about It, you know, I talked about how I wasn't really a big fan of some of the sound design choices in that film. Well, it's completely opposite the case here. I thought the sound design was absolutely brilliant. And Aronofsky, you know, really uses just simple things to put the audience on edge, from simple things like a simple floorboard creak to using things like, you know, a fire alarm to just get the audience just feeling a bit tension. You just a real simple way of making you feel on edge. It's just constantly, Aronofsky is constantly just toying with all of our senses, and it's really effective in doing that. You know, I also, you know, I just wanted to mention that, you know, I mean, this is sort of a common thing that I keep bringing up in a lot of these films, and it may be starting to scare some people, but I also related immensely to the Jennifer Lawrence character. I feel like obviously we're meant to, as you mentioned, the story is told from her perspective, so we're meant to be sort of viewing this world from her perspective. But even like just simple things, you know, I know we're not going to get into too much of thematically what this film is really about, but you could argue that it's about many different things, and one of those things is sort of this infringement of sort of, at least one of the main topics of the film is sort of this infringement of people into her world or whatever, or, you know, take that to whatever degree you want. And it was really effectively played off in that third act. It was also weird, like Kristen Wiig pops up or whatever. Maybe I shouldn't have mentioned that, because it's, I mean, but it's just a fun little thing. It's just a very minor part. Obviously, Javier Bardem also brings it immensely as her sort of husband figure, where we never really know exactly where his character stands in the movie is all the better for it. You know, and I also mentioned how, you know, I'm just going to mention this briefly. It doesn't really give away sort of what the movie is about, but it could be argued that at times, you know, I feel like for many people, this isn't an easy watch at all. It can be very unpleasant as it really heightens sort of the negative aspects of humanity and human beings or whatever. You know, people suck. I mean, that's something that I don't feel like I have to say to people. I feel like most people know that. Obviously, not everyone, but a lot of people do. And it's also it's dealing with different things, like even just simple ideas, like this idea of sharing your life with someone and having people sort of infringe on that. Just, I thought it was just really powerful stuff, and I thought the ending was just intensely impactful. You know, we talked about this briefly, I believe, in previous weeks, where I talked about how, you know, Black Swan, Aronofsky's previous sort of film, sort of in this realm, it's a different film, it functions differently, but, you know, it was one of the most intense movie-going experiences I've been through, and I definitely add Mother to that list now as well.
Yeah, this is, I don't know what it says about me that I also empathized with the character of Jennifer Lawrence and sympathized with her in some respects, and I'm just gonna, for personal reasons, leave it at that. I will say there is no shame in therapy to anyone who is out there listening. I am glad that you mentioned the sound design as well, because this is the probably sound mixing, more so than sound editing, is probably my favorite craft category, although I am a big fan of sound editing as well. Aronofsky has always used in every single movie just sound as more of an atmospheric than anything. And I think he puts his mixers through and his re-recording artists, everyone, really gives them almost like an empty palette. Not necessarily, you know, obviously, you know, the typical horror film has the jump scare, you know, that shrieking, shrill shit. But this is obviously not a typical horror film. And honestly, it's probably the best sound mix I've heard all year, too. It's, I don't want to say it's necessarily the most chaotic mix, although it definitely, you know, gets there towards the third act. But it definitely, I wish the Academy would kind of go out on a limb a little bit more and honor films like this that use sound a little bit more atmospherically than necessarily bringing all this chaos into a coherent, you know, a coherent melt. I think they did kind of get it right with The Social Network 7 years ago now by nominating that for Best Sound Mixing. But it's really, Aronofsky uses it, like you said, almost as a weapon against the audience. And like I said, in a just world, this would also walk away with the Oscar, but unfortunately, I don't even think it'll be on their radar.
And sort of getting back to something I sort of teased at the beginning of this podcast, I talked about how, you know, obviously this film, you know, general audiences are certainly not reacting all that positively to it, as they shouldn't, because this is more of an art house film. But, you know, I mentioned that Paramount has to take some of the blame for this. And the reason for that, and I'm sure you saw this trailer as well, that played before it this past week, where they were trying so badly, reeking of desperation. They basically cut this trailer for this film Mother together, where it's like, buy your tickets now, go see it, or whatever. It was like that classic sort of cheesy, you know, horror film. They're like trying to sell it or whatever, when this film is completely not that. So I feel like Paramount, you know, I feel like not only did they open this film a bit too wide, you know, in terms of, you know, how many theaters it played in, you know, resulting in, you know, a lackluster box office. I believe it was like 7.5 million or something this first weekend, which is fine, which would be fine for sort of a limited art house release. But obviously, the theater count doesn't sort of allow for that. But with Paramount sort of cutting that trailer together and trying desperately to get people to go see it, they don't realize that they're doing that. And then, you know, they're tricking general audiences to come see this movie that is not that type of movie at all. And it's not something, you know, obviously I'm a big fan of this movie, and, you know, I completely understand that a lot of general audiences are not going to go for something in this realm, as they want some escapism and probably not feel these very extreme brushes of reality that are felt in this film. So it's really interesting sort of case, and I feel like Paramount has to take responsibility for that, although I will also give them respect, because one of their spokesmen came out, this week, I believe, a spokeswoman, and she came out and said, and defended the film, from this, terrible cinema score, and said that, you know, this is the type of filmmaking, you know, we want to support, and give a filmmaker like Aronofsky a voice, which is definitely heartening to hear. I just feel like they maybe not, they probably shouldn't have tried, and I understand they're trying to make their money back, but maybe they shouldn't push it so hard with that crazy trailer that played before it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Aronofsky is a guy that kind of has a built-in audience and that prestige behind his name, so I think it's a lot easier sell than if this was a first or second time feature director. But, you know, kudos on it was Paramount, right?
Yes.
All right, that you know, for, you know, taking the chance in the first place. They knew this was going to be a tough sell. It got booed out of the room at Venice, which is hysterical to me. I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall at that screening. But I you know, obviously I don't think there's any shortage of challenging films like this, so I'm not necessarily worried that they're going to be going away, but I just think that they're going to be harder to come by in the mainstream, unless your name is Aronofsky or Anderson or Scorsese or something along those lines.
And I guess with that in mind, we can sort of shift to news, unless you had any other thoughts you had to make on Mother. But obviously a big recommendation for both of us, although with the caveat, certainly not for everyone. Yeah. That should go without saying anytime we recommend a movie. But we're sort of going to transition into our news portion. We have sort of two major news stories this week. And I guess I'm going to start with the news that Jamie Lee Curtis is returning to the Halloween franchise. Obviously, we've talked about this new sort of... It's technically, I believe, a sequel to the first two Halloween films, which sort of makes this news make a little bit more sense, because any of you familiar with the Halloween franchise know that Jamie Lee Curtis popped up in a lot of the sequels. I believe she even was killed off, although I'm not positive, because the is so convoluted, she might have been killed off and then just came back or whatever. But, you know, with this in mind, I know there's been a lot of confusion about this, but, you know, David Gordon Green and Danny McBride are writing this new Halloween film and working alongside with John Carpenter. This is the first film to have any involvement from Carpenter since the first couple Halloweens had his involvement on at least some level, the second one to a lesser extent for sure. But apparently this film is going to serve as a sequel to those first two, although I'm not entirely sure exactly how they're going to do it, because I remember the initial pitch was, oh, we're just going to pick up right as a sequel. But now that they're bringing back Jamie Lee Curtis, obviously she's aged a bit, as most human beings do in the years since, so it's hard to know exactly how she's going to fit into it, or if they're going to do like just a modern day and just pick up, like, this is just a years later and it's going to pick up and treat, you know, the third Halloween film through all the rest as just non-existent. But it's going to be interesting to see. Obviously, I'm really excited for this film. So I'm interested to see Jamie Lee Curtis return to the fold, although I'm obviously not entirely sure what to expect, but I'm excited nonetheless.
It's going to be great. Like I said last week, the original Halloween is my favorite classic horror film, and this is just the best news I could have possibly received. And even as someone who really didn't mind Season of the Witch that much, I'm glad that we're actually getting a proper denouement to this this particular chapter of the story. For the record, Jamie Lee Curtis's character was killed off in whatever the Resurrection.
I believe it's Resurrection.
Yeah, Busta Rhymes, that
yes,
one.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. that's unfortunate because that movie was really, really bad. I've seen all of them and I can tolerate most of them. That one was pretty terrible though, and I'm glad that they're going to be getting back to the idea of Michael Myers is like this, you know, complete psychopath, has absolutely no remorse and killing for no other reason other than that it's his impulse. He likes to hurt people, and I think this is going to be much more in line with the first two, obviously, with the talent involved in John Carpenter, not only his seal of approval, but his seeming, you know, desire to be involved in writing the score, which again is just about the best fucking news that any horror film fan could have gotten last week.
And obviously, we also have to mention that Halloween Now, along with this news that Jamie Lee Curtis was cast in the film, it also has an official release date of October 19th, 2018. So we only have to wait really just a little over a year, and it'll be hitting right around Halloween time. And I'm really excited for that because it's obviously been a while since there's been at least a particular Halloween film released during that time of year. As I believe the Rob Zombie films actually weren't released. Yeah, they were released earlier on, so it didn't really make all that much sense. Or whatever, although I'm just really excited to see, you know, one of these classic films of a classic horror franchise be released in one of my favorite times of year, to say the least. And now, sort of with that in mind, we'll transition to the other big news, a more somber bit of news, and that legendary actor Harry Dean Stanton has passed away. He's definitely an actor who had a big impact on me. A lot of people will know him from some of his more mainstream work, like in Alien, although for me personally, it doesn't get much better than Paris, Texas. And that is a film that really has Harry Dean Stanton's easily his best performance and one of the greatest movie scenes of all time. If you haven't seen Paris, Texas, you need to watch it immediately. And there's no better time than now to do it, to sort of praise this great legendary sort of character actor of Harry Dean Stanton. Also, obviously known for a lot of his collaborations with David Lynch. And it was also great seeing him in the new Twin Peaks, The Return, in the few episodes he was in.
Yeah, shame on me for never having gotten around to Paris, Texas. I know you've been on my case for a couple of years to get to that, and unfortunately it just kind of slipped through the cracks for me for whatever reason. Shame on me, but he gave us 91 amazing years as far as I'm concerned. My favorite performance was from the HBO series Big Love with now dearly departed Bill Paxton as well, where he plays like this maniacal polygamist who is just kind of bending the rest of the universe around to his will. And it's really just incredible work, very understated. He's a very naturalistic actor. And it's I mean, you know, 91, the guy had a great life. At this point, mourning might not be the right word, but more so celebrating what he accomplished in his life. And I just, you know, I saw a quote online where he was being interviewed, and the interviewer asked him about the Care Bears movie, and Harry Dean Stanton was wondering why he was being asked about that, and the reviewer says, because you were in it. And Harry Dean Stanton just kind of looks, oh, fuck. So that's the kind of man he was, and that's the kind of man I want to remember him as. God bless you, and rest in peace.
And I also just want to mention briefly, sort of, to wrap this up, I mean, it's what's really great about Harry Dean Stanton's actor is even though he has passed on and moved on to hopefully good things for himself, there's also a new film being released starring him that's going to serve as his last role, although I'm not entirely sure exactly if he has any other roles sort of that have already been filmed. But the starring role in this film, Lucky, directed by longtime actor John Carroll Lynch. So I'm really interested to see that film, and we're going to try and see that in the coming months.
Definitely. And now with that, we'll transition to a segment that I was actually really, really looking forward to. I always, trailers are usually the most fun part of a movie for me. I know that's kind of weird to say, but consider this kind of like our coming attraction segment. So each of us are going to kind of just list our top five most anticipated of the year. And I'm going to start with Luca Guadagnino's Call Me By Your Name, which is just, I know, you know, there were criticisms of this film coming out of the festival saying that it's a bit slight, a bit pithy, and that's totally fine because it just looks so beautiful, and it just has like this air of romanticism in it. Armie Hammer is just a beautiful human being, and I can't wait to see what he can pull off in this. Michael Stuhlbarg as well. I know they said he's kind of wasted in that, but just from that little like 30-second tirade he goes on describing the structure, the masculinity of a statue, and, you know, obviously has this very strong gay overtone to it, and it, but it's just sold in such a, like, romantic way, and it really is just captivating. And, you know, obviously in a year where there might have been more heavy-hitting films coming out in the later months, it might not have made this list, but as it stands, it's my number five most anticipated.
And obviously, it's definitely going to be a film we're going to be checking out for the podcast, as it definitely feels like it's going to be one of the sort of major contenders in award season. Although, what's great and what's heartening about this time of year is that there is no front runner at the time, and that's something to be celebrated, because there's nothing worse than a film being sort of declared the front runner, and then there's these two films sort of going back and forth. Although I'm saying that now, and then it's going to happen in the next couple weeks, naturally. But my sort of fifth most anticipated of the rest of 2017. Is Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, Martin McDonagh's new film, which I honestly couldn't be more excited for. I'm sure many of you saw the trailer. It stars Frances McDormand and this great cast of characters. And what I love to hear about the reviews coming out of the screenings of these festivals is Frances McDormand is very good in the film, but a lot of people are saying that Sam Rockwell is the actor who truly steals the movie, and that's something that's not surprising to me in the slightest. Sam Rockwell is one of my favorite actors. I always think he's really interesting, even though a lot of sometimes he's in these projects that feel lesser than his talent. I feel like he always brings his full force, and he's worked with Martin McDonagh before. I love Martin McDonagh's style, his sort of a way of writing and directing, and I feel like this is definitely one of my most anticipated, and I'm also excited for it because it gives the very underrated actor Clark Peters an important role in a film, Lester Freeman Forever, for those Wire fans out there.
Absolutely, and I will be getting to Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri in a bit, but my number four is a directorial debut from Greta Gerwig in Lady Bird, which is kind of a semi-autobiographical high school coming-of-age movie starring Saoirse Ronan and Laurie Metcalf. And Laurie Metcalf, I think she's one of those actresses who really raised herself to prestige status in the theater circuit, and I think now Hollywood and television is finally just starting to come around and using her properly, so I'm really excited about this. But the trailer just has that, you know, kind of that snarky teen youth that I kind of feed on in movies. And I don't know, everyone's saying Saoirse Ronan, this is her best work, and I think she's very good in general, so I'm super excited to see what she can pull off of that as well.
Yeah, if this was a top six, Lady Bird would have been my sixth choice for most anticipated. I'm a big Greta Gerwig fan, definitely stemming from my eternal love for Noah Baumbach's Frances Ha. I could watch that movie on loop forever and never get tired of it, just for me personally. moving on to my number four is a film we're not going to have to wait much longer for, as it's coming out in the next couple weeks, and that is Denis Villeneuve's Blade Runner 2049. Obviously, both of us are really pumped for this film. We're both big fans of Denis Villeneuve. Ryan Gosling, I love you. I'm not ashamed to say that. And I'm really excited to see how he works in a Denis Villeneuve film. Obviously, really excited for Roger Deakins' work as cinematographer. We can only hope and cross our fingers that somehow he will win a Best Cinematography Oscar, as if the trailers are anything to be believed. He's already deserving of the honor.
Definitely. Deakins might be my favorite behind-the-camera person in film history. We'll have a lot more to say about that going forward, and maybe even a little bit of a... maybe we can do a fun retrospective on some of his best work. I'm also excited to see how the animal Batista fares in something a little bit more serious than Guardians of the Galaxy, but to be continued on that one. For me, number three is going to be James Franco's The Disaster Artist. This is, you know, as we've alluded to in the past, that it's a... the story of the making of the most notorious film of all time, as far as I'm concerned, The Room. It's in, like we had said last week in the podcast, that it seems like it's coming from a place of pure admiration for this man's desire to actually make a movie, regardless of any perceived talent. There's a love for this. You know, obviously, there's going to be a lot of poking fun at of Tommy Wiseau, as inept as he might be, but I also think, like I said, there's going to be some admiration for the man there. It just seems like it gets the tone just right. It really balances that fine line between, you know, the Seth Rogen, Adam Goldberg style humor with something a little bit more prestigious isn't the right word, but with something a little bit more filmic in mind.
And I'll be sharing my thoughts on Disaster Artist in just a second, because it's a little bit higher up on my list. But my number three most anticipated for the rest of the year, my childhood self would be ashamed that this is not at number one. But honestly, I mean, I'm really pumped for this movie, but there's just a couple of movies that I'm more excited for. And my number three is Star Wars: The Last Jedi, directed by Rian Johnson. I mean, it's a Star Wars film. It sort of goes without saying, you know, Star Wars was sort of my first film love. And although my taste has definitely evolved and changed throughout the years, Star Wars still has a place in my heart. And I'm really excited, mostly because we're going to get to see Mark Hamill act in a major role in a big blockbuster film. And all the things I'm hearing about it is he's really good. And I'm hopeful, you know, I've heard a lot of, there's been some talk that, you know, they should try and screen the film beforehand to try and get it some awards notoriety, because some people are saying that some of the aspects of it are awards worthy, maybe particularly Mark Hamill. But we probably won't, because Disney does not want the spoilers out there based on sort of what happens in the plot. But I mean, it's Star Wars. It's Episode 8. I'm pumped.
You know, it's funny you mentioned it's awards prospect. My itchy palms would be remiss to not mention the fact that there is actually a betting line in Vegas right now on whether or not the film is going to be nominated for Best Picture. Needs to be placed by October 31st, so hedge your bets now. It's Star Wars. It's Rian Johnson. I'm a big, big fan of Rian Johnson. I'm sure it's going to be great. Number two for me was the aforementioned Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. I'm a big, big Martin McDonagh fan. I've actually gone out of my way to read some of his plays, and the Pillow Man is just really, oh God, if you haven't, I don't think it's in production in any particular facet at the moment, but if you can find the script for it somewhere online, I highly recommend reading it. I'm a big fan of Frances McDormand, and people are saying this is the best use of her since Fargo, which is high praise, because I think that she can really class up any movie. Even maybe not Transformers, but that's another story. But yeah, I think it really just has like this spitfire attitude, and it really, in the trailer, you see her react in ways that you kind of wish you could react in real life. And I don't, you know, if you haven't seen it, go out of your way and watch the trailer. It's a 2.5 minute clip. And honestly, it really is just so cathartic to watch her tear into the other people, the ineptitude that her daughter's murder has yet to be solved. McDonagh really knows how to make the darkest shit imaginable funny. I think you know, In Bruges is a great example of how that, like, this utter bleakness can be so entertaining and engaging and amusing at the same time. So I think it comes out in October, November, something like that. So hopefully it comes sooner than later.
And also, because I forgot to mention this when I was discussing Three Billboards, it's interesting to note that this film won TIFF's People's Choice Award, which is really interesting, because in previous years, the winner of the People's Choice Award was, you know, I believe 12 Years a Slave won it one year. In fact, I was there that year and got to see the first screening of it with Steve McQueen and Michael Fassbender there, and which was pretty mind-blowing. But what's really interesting is a film like this winning the People's Choice Award, because a lot of people weren't expecting it at all, because it's a bit darker in tone, but this just makes me love TIFF even more that they chose Martin McDonagh's new film as sort of their favorite of the festival. So that just gets me more excited for it. And also, for any of you Martin McDonagh fans out there, I highly recommend checking out one of his early short films, Six Shooter, which is currently available on YouTube. And I actually showed it in my screenwriting class last night. So it was just I was just on the mind as I discussed it. But moving to my number two is a film that Rian already mentioned, James Franco's The Disaster Artist. I'll be honest, I think I've watched the trailer for this about 100 times in the past few days. I like watch it on a loop because it just brings me so much joy. I honestly can't believe that James Franco has so perfected Tommy Wiseau. Like, I can watch the trailer, it's like watching Tommy Wiseau, just an alternate version of Tommy Wiseau. I've also been watching a lot of the interviews they've been doing. They've been doing a lot of four-person interviews with James, Tommy Wiseau, Dave Franco, and Greg Sestero, which has been a lot of fun to see the sort of the dynamic there. I've heard there's been some comments going along where in some of the interviews it looks like the evolution of Tom, of like people constantly turning into Tommy. It's sort of this line of actors that their appearance gets more and more close to Tommy as you go along. So I thought that was really funny and interesting. But I mean, it goes without saying, I'm really pumped for this. A big fan of The Room, as those are the worst movie ever made, although really entertaining, so it can't possibly be that. But I'm just really pumped. I'm really pumped to see how James Franco handles his directorial duties. As obviously, he's gotten his fair share of criticism for, you know, obviously he's worked on so many projects, and sometimes, you know, they haven't always been of the highest quality. But for me personally, it's going to be hard to screw this up just based on, I mean, the incredible performance it's clear he's giving just from the trailer alone.
Absolutely. And now turning to what I'm sure, I don't even have to look at your list. I know what that your number one is exactly the same as mine. That is the currently untitled new Paul Thomas Anderson film. Formerly the working title was The Phantom Thread. I kind of wish they went with that because it's pretty amazing. I don't know much about this other than Daniel Day-Lewis playing a fashion designer in 1950s. I forget which.
That's pretty much what I know.
Yeah, that's all I know. I know Leslie Manville is in it, who I'm a huge, huge fan of. I think she was absolutely robbed of an Academy a nomination, let alone the fucking Oscar itself, for Mike Leigh's Another Year. But I just knowing the talent involved in that, I don't need to know anything else. It's number one on my list.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. Obviously, Paul Thomas Anderson is a god. He's my favorite filmmaker, period. He's the single, if he didn't exist, I probably wouldn't be as close into films as I am today. I'm obsessed with him, and I make no bones about that. Obviously, this is my number one most anticipated for the rest of the year as well. And one of the things that's really striking to me about this film is it really feels like sort of PTA's first sort of completely sort of British set film. The cast is entirely, but I'm pretty sure it's entirely British, so none of his usual faces are going to be popping up in this besides, obviously, Daniel Day-Lewis. But that honestly makes it more intriguing for me, as I'm really interested to see how his style has evolved or changed maybe for this film. I'm just really interested because, I mean, there really isn't much known about it at this point. There hasn't even been a trailer. I'm just waiting with bated breath for PTA to just drop some weird teaser on YouTube like he usually does or whatever. But I don't know. I'm just really excited. And, you know, sometimes it's a film that is more unknown that just makes you more excited. Although, in this case, because it's made by Paul Thomas Anderson, it's automatically number one most anticipated. And people are counting on it being my number one favorite film of the year, as most of his previous films have been, but that remains to be seen, and I'm just really excited to see it come Christmas time.
Absolutely, and I think it's also worth pointing out that you and I, our favorite films of all time are both P.T. Anderson films, although they are different films, mine being Magnolia and yours being Boogie Nights. I think that kind of, I don't know what that says other than that the man is easily the best director working today, but it's just amazing to me, and like you have said to me about Magnolia, that you get something different out of it every time you watch. And I first saw this movie when I was 13. I was really taken aback by it. I did, you know, obviously I had a lot of admiration for it back then, but it's interesting how it has evolved for me and how it's become more emotional, and how I've, you know, with each subsequent viewing, really like attached to a different character in each viewing. And I think that really speaks to how dense his films really are. And most recently, you know, the William H. Macy character, where he just kind of breaks down sobbing at the end with John C. Reilly and the frog knocks him out off the ladder. Oh Jesus, if you haven't seen it, spare yourself 3 hours and go see it.
Yeah, I honestly don't think there's a better sort of actor's director working today. It's why, like, if you listen to podcast interviews with a lot of actors, they're always like, oh, who's the filmmaker you want to work with? Like, more often than not, Paul Thomas Anderson will be on that list. And I'm always interested to see, because I feel like all of his films have, you know, a handful of great performances from various actors, and I'm sure this latest will be the same.
Absolutely. And now turning our attention to next week, we will be seeing Kingsman: The Golden Circle. I didn't see the first one. I'm not really going to prepare myself. I'm sure I can follow it just fine. And we will also be seeing David Gordon Green's Boston Marathon bombing movie. Is that correct?
Yes. Titled Stronger, starring Jake Gyllenhaal, one of definitely my favorite actors working today. Easily one of the best. So we'll be checking out Kingsman: The Golden Circle as well as Stronger. And I'm still debating whether I'm going to watch the first Kingsman before I see this. We'll see if I have time or not. But regardless, we'll be able to enjoy it at least on some level, as it looks insane with a crazy cast. So I guess we'll share our thoughts with you guys next week.
Save us, Channing Tatum.